over my box.
Good evening. Our first order of business are three public hearings. And in advance of the first one, I need to make a statement about the bond, the first issue. So the first public hearing is proposed issuance by the county of its airport bond anticipation notes 2020 Series A, subject to the alternative minimum tax, in the appropriate aggregate principal amount of $10 million, the Series A notes. And I am reading into the record. The county proposes to issue its airport bond anticipation notes 2020 Series A, subject to the alternative minimum tax, in the approximate aggregate principal amount of $10 million. The proceeds from the sale of the Series A notes will finance the current refunding of the county's $7.5 million airport bond anticipation notes 2019 Series B, subject to the alternative minimum tax, the proceeds of which were used to finance a capital improvement project, the project, at the county's existing Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport, the airport. Kathy, is this all one sentence? This is all one sentence, isn't it? This long, folks. Okay, bear with me.
Start again.
No! No! Okay, the airport, located at 1 Culligan Drive, I didn't write this, obviously, 1 Culligan Drive, Ithaca, New York, 14850. That was the first, wait a minute, that was the first purpose of this. These notes will do what I just said. Number two, will provide new monies for the project. And three, pay all or a portion of the cost incidental to the issuance of the Series A notes, including issuance costs of the Series A notes. Okay, that's the end of that sentence. The project consists of additions, renovations, and improvements, including an expansion to the facility's existing terminal building, apron reconstruction, installation of a new passenger boarding bridge, installation of a geothermal heating and cooling system, installation of overhead canopies with solar panels to be located in the existing public parking lot, installation of additional solar panels on top of the existing curbside canopy, and construction of a new federal customs facility, all to include site access and parking improvements, demolition, utility, mechanical, plumbing and electrical improvements, the acquisition of original furnishings, fixtures, and equipment, and payment of professional fees and all other necessary costs incidental to such work. The county is the owner and operator of the airport. Okay. That's by the lawyers, right, Kathy? All right. Is there anyone who would like to speak in this public hearing on this issuance? And Barbara, you wrote. Okay, so I assume this is our forum for public privilege, but you want to speak on this topic, right?
Yeah, and one other topic.
Okay. Let's hold the other topic. Yeah, this is only for the airport issue and the bond, okay? The other topic, the tenants' rights, we'll do that under public privilege. Different 3 minutes.
So do you want me to just wait for public privilege?
No. This is the hearing on the airport right now.
Okay, so I'll make it.
Go. It's your turn to talk about the airport project.
Just say about the airport thing. I think that we should cut our losses on the airport expansion. Complete the modernization that pleases everybody. Complete whatever was necessary to do to come up to regulation for the wording is for special needs and to get us up to code. And then cut out the Customs and Border Patrol facility. We have a good argument with the state that since all of this was negotiated, the state has pretty much declared that it's bankrupt. So you say, look, we negotiated with the public under different terms. We told our public that the costs would be covered by the nation and the state. It turns out that really isn't realistic, that there were these cost overruns that we did not inform the public would happen. And And this is an opportunity to rethink the project. There is no one enthusiastic about the addition of the Customs and Border Patrol. And since the original negotiation of the contract, we have watched Customs and Border Patrol nationally get more and more crazed with its own power, more and more unpredictable in the ugliness of what it is willing to do, more and more made it more and more clear that nobody controls Customs and Border Patrol. This is a plea to cut that out of the airport expansion deal, renegotiate with whichever parties need to be renegotiated with. A whole lot has changed since the original negotiation, including the fact that the director of the airport assured us no bonds at the very beginning. No bond issues it would be issued in order to fund this project. This was a funded project. That's how it was given to the public. It turns out that's not the case, and it is competing with the funds we desperately need for affordable housing, to address the opioid addiction, and to deal with this issue of social inequality locally, which ends up filtering into all our problems, getting really serious about climate change. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. Is there anybody else who would like to discuss this topic? Thank you. Before I close that hearing, Jason, would you help us out with a couple of points for the record?
Happy to. So as you know, in I believe July, you awarded the customs facility contract for the third phase of the project. Project is underway. The terminal is almost substantially complete. I'd say in the next week or two it will be complete, and we'll be looking for an opening of that. The customs facility is moving along. It's housed in terms of the walls are up, roofs on, and they're on the interior now. Suspect in the next few weeks we'll be communicating with Customs Border Patrol on the MOU, which is typical of the process that undergoes when you have a facility like this. You usually start to engage in that MOU around when it's 85% complete, which the project will be done shortly or will be at that mark shortly. So the project is moving along, and we'll be meeting our timelines in terms of the deadlines of the terminal expansion within the next 2 weeks. So we expect that to be open very, very shortly, and very excited. If you haven't been up there, it's a good, you know, every week you're seeing more progress, which is wonderful to see. And then shortly after that, the custom facility will be completed. This bond anticipation note is similar to what we did last year, except it's a little bit more because the brunt of the construction has taken place over the past year. Generally, with a project of this size, you take out a bond anticipation note, and as you continue to pay expenses along with the project, you receive reimbursements, and it allows the project to flow forward. At the end of this project, any funds that aren't reimbursed through the different sources would then be permanently bonded, and then we would use funds similar to PFC funds to pay for that to pay for that debt or portions of that debt. That's generally the process we expect to follow with this project. Discussed it a little bit at budget time as well, but this bond anticipation note wouldn't turn into a bond until February 2021.
Thank you very much, Jason. Appreciate that. Anybody else want to speak on this public hearing? All right, thank you. I'll close that one and open a public hearing on the proposed local law number 8 of 2019, repeal of local law number 4 of 2019, a local law overriding tax levy limit for 2020. Would anyone like to address the legislature on that? All right, I'll close that public hearing and open a public hearing on proposed local law number I of 2019, a local law to amend chapter 133 of the county code entitled residency. Would anyone like to speak on that issue? Okay, I will close that public hearing and open the December 3rd, 2019 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Would you please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands,
our nation,
our God, indivisible, with liberty
and justice
for all.
Roll call of members.
Rich John.
Here.
Anna Kellis.
Here.
Dan Klein.
Here.
Ann Corman.
Present.
Mike Lane.
Here.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne. Dave McKenna has asked to be excused. Glenn Morey.
Here.
Mike Sigler.
Here. Here.
Shauna Black.
Here.
Amanda Champion.
Here.
Deborah Dawson has asked to be excused. Henry Granison.
Here and present.
Martha Robertson.
Here.
We have 11 members present.
We're missing a few, but we do have a quorum. I would, sensitive to all the different things we have going on tonight, I will be trying to juggle the agenda so that some people who don't need to stay won't have to stay a long time. So that's, so bear with me. And if you notice something that, hey, if we just do this, you know, we can get that item of business and let somebody go home, just raise your hand and let me know. But we do have public privilege of the floor is the next item. So first, I just have one person. By signing this, I agree to a three-minute time limit. I agree not to raise my voice. I agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of the peace. I agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, I agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. I agree that if I'm asked to, if I cause a disruption and I'm asked to leave, I will leave the chambers. I have Barbara Reaganspan, and if anybody else would like to address the ledge, just there's blue form in the back. Barbara.
Hi. I wanted to say before, happy Thanksgiving belatedly. I just returned from a really healing, beautiful time with extended family, and I hope all of you had good experiences and happy future, happy new year for the near future. Okay, so getting back to the airport expansion thing, I want to say that one of the worst losses in terms of the politics of the current national administration, which I believe that most of the people in this room deplore, is that aside from everything we can name, the whipping up racism, anti-immigrant sentiment, all of that, we'll put all of that aside. But I think one of the awful philosophical losses has been the loss of what I used to call noble conservatism, which I really respected. As a person who never called myself a liberal, I always said I saw things structurally, and I put a structural lens on my analysis of things. And I think that when I say we have a loss of noble conservatism, I mean the kind of conservatism that talked about fiscal responsibility and that never would have extended bonds in this irresponsible way, so that 30 years from now they come due and a lot of us in this room won't even be alive, but our children and grandchildren inherit responsibility that we took on foolishly. Okay? So that's my statement about no, I don't approve of extending the bond. And I think bonds, this financial reevaluating a financial package and figuring out what the short-term advantage is to reevaluation, it's always sold to the public as gain. And I want to point out that's a fundamentally dishonest process. Let's just call it disingenuous, okay? All right, I'll stop there. The second thing I want to talk about is just a pleasant thing. It's that this bill, the omnibus bill, which I just started reading 2 weeks ago, and it's going to take a month. The omnibus legislation passed by New York State, it's a pretty wonderful package of bills called Housing Stabilization and Tenants Protection. It has a number of different names. Anyway, I'm sure that you're beginning to investigate it. The reason I'm, and probably have done work on it already, and for whatever work you've done on it, I'm very grateful. You probably know it has an opt-in. It requires a referendum for us to get rent regulation. I just wanted to make a plea that since there will be a choice of whether the rent regulation is, you know, what we decide is the municipality, Ithaca or Tompkins County, I just wanted to make a plea that you make it Tompkins County. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Barbara. Is there anybody else who'd like to address the public? All right, thank you. I don't see any municipal official. Am I missing anybody out there? Okay. All right. Let's go to legislative privilege of the floor. Then we have a present, you know, healthy meaning long and full conversation about public health and mental health, and probably to be followed by a discussion. If we could, let me do legislative privilege, and then let's do the consent agenda before we go to the presentation, if that's okay. All right? So, any legislators? Dan.
I want to report a little something from the Environmental Management Council. In Tompkins County, there are 195 unique natural areas. They're designated spaces that have some special environmental attribute, and this is a county project to have mapped all these out. They don't have much of a legal status, but they are important for municipalities to recognize when they're doing their planning, and they're important for environmentalists to know about, and they're important for landowners who might be in these areas. And the maps that we were using for these were roughly 20 years old, and the aerial photography has improved a lot since then. So over the last 5 years, the legislature has funded a little bit each year for the Environmental Management Council to update those maps. And I just want to report that that is now finished. All 195 unique natural areas have been remapped. Their boundaries adjusted to more properly fit what's actually there and to fit property lines when possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan, and thanks to the EMC. Anyone else? Shauna, then Annie.
I just have a small but very important announcement about DeWitt Middle School. Their drama club will be sponsoring their annual performance of Frozen Junior, that's a whole other movie. Next Thursday, the 12th, Friday the 13th, 14th, and 15th. And you could go on their Facebook page, and that has access to ticket information. I hope that everyone can attend.
Thank you, Sean. Annie Corman.
Thank you. So one plea that I just have out, as I know a lot of departments and people in the community are planning more holiday celebrations, is just think about if you're having something where you're having a lot of people over and you're feeding people and you're providing beverages, is try to minimize the environmental impact and have reusable items, utensils. If you really need to have things that are disposable, there are beverage ware is really hard to have compostable beverage ware, so it just doesn't compost, the kind of corn plastic cups. So please have reusable ones, or ask people to bring a water bottle, or have cups for people. And at Green Star and at B&W Supply, I think it's called B&W Wholesale, they have compostable ware that is actually does compost in your yard, or you can send it to with your compost if you do that, if you have it picked up and brought to a larger compost place. And I also wanted to just let people know, in Trumansburg on December 7th, Saturday the 7th, for the 24th year in a row, we're having Winterfest, and that's 4 to 7 p.m. It's really fun. There's hay rides, there's music, there's often juggling. Most of all the shops in Trumansburg are open to have different specials. There's kids' activities, something for everybody. everybody. So you can go look. There's a big Facebook announcement on that. And I don't have the dates. I didn't have a chance to look up the dates. But the high school is presenting the Laramie Project as from their arts department. And that's coming up. It's, I think it's the 16th and 17th, which, again, you can look on Facebook for that. And so they're addressing an issue, the LGBTQ issue. It was about someone who was killed years ago. And anyway, so it's really... It hasn't been controversial as far as I've heard, and I'm hoping people will come out and support that. I hope it doesn't get controversial. I think we need to talk about this. The school is encouraging people to bring their teenagers to come and then have a discussion afterwards. So if everybody can just look that up on Facebook, and I hope you can attend. Thank you.
Thank you, Annie. Anna, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, I normally don't do event announcements, but it is December and there's 50 million of them, so I thought I'd throw a few out at you guys so they get on your schedules and some people in the public. Wanted to remind people of the Dorothy Cotton Gala, which is December 5th this week from 6 to 9:30 p.m. At the Carrier Ball, and that is at the Statler Hotel. And if they do sell out of tickets but people want to support the Dorothy Cotton Institute anyway, you can actually still donate. So I did want to make that clear to people, and you can go to their website or contact their office. They do amazing human rights work in the county and in the country overall. So I think that's a great thing to support for someone's Christmas present. Highly recommend that. Also, our local bookstore that is community owned, a very rare thing, has its annual holiday party. That's Buffalo Street Books on Buffalo Street, and that is December 6th from 7 to 9 p.m. Highly recommend going, buy a book, keep our local bookstore open, because there are very few left in the country, and they do a lot of events and support for our children, for our local community, so please help keep them open. And December 12th, the 30th year celebration of the Finger Lakes Land Trust at the Museum of the Earth. 30 years, folks, of supporting our community, helping to preserve local lands, natural resources. So another great institution to support. I wanted to make sure that everybody knew about that. That is from, I think that is from, if I have it right here on my phone, because it is in my calendar, 5:30 to 7:30 at Museum of the Earth. And that's it.
Andy Sepp has been director all this 30 years, right? No. Sorry, Andy. Hi, Andy. Mike Lane, and then back to Annie.
One of the folks that isn't here tonight is Deborah Dawson, and I betcha she's watching us on TV tonight. And I just want to shout out to her and say we can't wait till you come back. We know you're recuperating, and we expect you here next meeting. And as long as we're talking about events, Saturday, come to Dryden. There's events in the village all day long. Starting in the morning, the library's involved, the cafe's involved, the churches are involved. I think at 5 o'clock there will be the tree lighting on the village green. Santa Claus will arrive on the brand-new aerial truck, fire truck that Dryden Neptune Hose Company has now acquired. And that will be an exciting event, too. And the last thing, and certainly not the least, anybody didn't notice we had a snowstorm. We don't very often get a foot by December 2nd, but we did. And unfortunately, we had that ice on to begin with, which is still under there and underfoot. But let's think about our emergency responders that were out there, our highway department employees who were out there in dangerous conditions, trying to do what they could to make think safe. Let's think about our sheriff's patrols and even our administration, which was, I know, monitoring the situation and sending out travel advisories with the sheriff and things like that. So we owe them a debt of gratitude whenever we have these storms, but every day of the year as well.
Thank you, Mike. Annie?
Thank you. I just wanted to, I had a chance to look up the Laramie Project dates, and it's actually this Friday and Saturday, 6 and 7, at the Charles O. Dickinson High School in Trumansburg, and tickets are $10 for adults and $5 for students. Thank you.
Henry.
Okay, following suit, there's a Downtown Ithaca Winter Light Festival starting this Thursday. There's also the Downtown's Ithaca's 10th annual Chowder Fest. Chowder Cook-Off is also this Saturday. Also, the Town and Gown event is this Saturday morning at the high school.
Thank you. Yeah, that was on my list, Henry, the Togos.
the Togos are coming up. In fact, one of our persons here will be honored with a Togo Award. Not saying who, but she's in the room.
Yes, but I'm sponsored by Cornell University, and I think they do a wonderful job, for one thing, of highlighting a lot of partnerships between Cornell groups and community groups all year long, and then recognizing retirees from public service. And our own, I think we can, it's not a surprise. Marsha Lynch, Pat Buchel, Julia Maddock, Lee Shurtleff are all going to be honored on Saturday. Did I miss anybody? Got it? Okay. All right. Thanks, Henry. It's 9:30 on Saturday. Mike Lang.
I'm sorry. I should have said when we were talking about the responders that the people at our airport kept our airport open when most of the airports in the region were closed. And I actually heard someone talking about the fact that they were having to get a car from Syracuse to be able to get a substitute flight out of Ithaca. You don't hear that very often.
But. That's great. Well done, Mike. All right. Anything else from anybody here? All right. Let me just to follow, and I also was to go into my report. I also was going to thank the first responders and our snow crew, and I understand that there's some fender benders and maybe a couple that were a little worse than that, but it's a real tribute when they can manage to get through an event like this last week. On our airport, we had a visit by Kelly Cummings from the governor's office last Tuesday, and she was doing sort of kicking the tires and checking how the renovation and expansion is going, and she was very pleased, and looks like we're in kind of final negotiations on a particular date for the governor to return for a ribbon cutting, and that will be before the end of the year. I can say that much. We don't have the date yet. I wanted to mention that I've had a few volunteers for that working group to talk about the legislature department head retreat, and so I'd like to specify that that group will include Shauna, Rich, Henry, and myself to work along with folks that Jason identifies, department heads, administration, et cetera, to work on planning a retreat early in the year. So you can pigeonhole the four of us if you have some ideas. And then finally, I just wanted to say, to pull a line from poetry and song that I have liked over the years. To everything, there's a season. And I just wanted to let people know, and Mike Lane two weeks ago asked if people would announce whether they're running for leadership or not. So I just wanted to make sure folks know, everybody on the same plate, that I will not be running for leadership for this coming year. The public may not know that we may not realize that we elect chair and vice chair for one-year terms. So I've been honored and pleased to be able to lead this group for six of the last 10 years. I think that's enough. So I just wanted to let folks know. And I know there are a lot of very capable folks here that, and I look forward to passing the baton and getting to work on some other things. So, all right, with that, Jason, you wanted to get us started on our presentation for tonight.
Sure, be happy to.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I lied. Okay. We were going to do the consent agenda so that some folks might be able to go home. First, are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Mike Lane.
I'm going to withdraw Resolution AA. We've had the public hearing tonight, and I think that's a good thing. But I don't think this is one that we ought to go ahead and act on tonight. So we'll probably bring it back next meeting.
Okay. Henry.
We withdraw Resolution A.
Well, I'll read the consent agenda. You're not the chair of facilities. This is okay. Mike's actually withdrawing from the agenda as chair of budget. So, Anna, you had the TCAT appointment?
Yes, thank you. I wanted to add that is not in my folder. I did not see it. But add that appointment to the agenda.
There's no resolution. We need to make a motion.
Correct. I am making a motion to add to the agenda an appointment for the opening TCAT seat.
And that would be to reappoint Dan.
That would be to reappoint Dan Klein. I figured I would say that once it was added. But, yes, the intention is to reappoint Dan for another 3-year term.
Okay. We need 10 votes to add that to the agenda, and that will come back up under. I'm sorry. I need a second. And that would be added to the agenda under HED. Seconded by Glenn Moore. All right. All in favor of adding that to the agenda? Any opposed? That's unanimous. Anything else? All right, then I'll read through the consent agenda. Let me know. And this is a moment where if you want something pulled from that, let me know. Resolution A.
Pull it, please.
Okay. Resolution B, airport marketing and terminal advertising contract extension, Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport, ID 9025. Resolution C, authorization to transfer the balance of the Capital Reserve Fund for Natural, Scenic, and Recreational Resource Protection to the Natural Infrastructure Capital Program, ID 9041. Resolution pulling C. Kathy Covert and I had a conversation earlier today. Can we pass the subsequent ones that have the
language
Natural Infrastructure Capital Program as established, or are they contingent on C?
Or can we just change the name and have it be manifest?
I mean, the issue is it's a fund. Reso C establishes the Natural Infrastructure Capital Program, and several of these that follow appropriate funding from that fund. Rick, is this? What would your advice be?
We orchestrated it in a way where they're combining these three different sources of funds into one program. In Resolution C, you're basically doing away with the Capital Reserve Fund for Natural, Scenic, and Recreation Resources, which is a separate reserve in the general fund, and we're taking the balance of that money and placing it into a capital project, which is the Natural Infrastructure Program project, to consolidate funding. So it would be appropriate to pass this one first before you start making allocations from the other.
Okay. Anna, just a second. So you were saying it would not be appropriate what?
It would be most appropriate to move and pass Resolution C before any of the other ones that take monies from the infrastructure program before you fund it fully, as Resolution C does.
Okay. Anna?
Well, my question was for Rick, that if we were not going to pass C, say C were just removed, is the budget line that these are coming from the same budget line anyway? And the only thing that would need to be changed would be the title. That's my question. And maybe Katie knows that better. So it would be the same title anyway because it has the funds to cover all of these. And if that's the case, and the budget line is the same line, then it doesn't matter whether we pass C or not. We would still pass these as written. Correct?
So from this, it sounds like they could, the rest of these could stay on consent. So Dan and then Mike?
I was going to offer, if that doesn't work out, to withdraw my withdrawal, and with the understanding that we could have a discussion at some time in the future about the fund and potentially amend the, some of the provisions of it. So if that's what's necessary, I'm willing to do that.
That would be easier.
That would resolve the whole thing. And I think that's, I did talk to Katie earlier, and certainly we could expand or change eligibility under future discussion. So, okay. Mike, does your comment go in?
I was going to craft a motion to solve the problem, but I don't need to now.
Okay. All right, so C remains on consent. Thank you very much, Dan, and everybody. Resolution D, making a negative determination of environmental significance in relation to resolution number blank of 2019, appropriating funds from the Tompkins County Natural Infrastructure Capital Program for the Summerland Farm Project, ID 9042. Resolution E, appropriating funds from the Tompkins County Natural Infrastructure Capital Program for the Summerland Farm Project, ID 9045. Resolution F, making a negative determination of environmental significance in relation to resolution number blank of 2019, appropriating funds from the Natural Infrastructure Capital Program for the Shindagan Hollow Brown Easement Project, ID 9047. Resolution G, appropriating funds from the Natural Infrastructure Capital Program for the Shindagan Hollow Brown Easement Project, ID 9048. Resolution H, making a negative determination of environmental significance in relation to resolution number blank of 2019, appropriating funds from the Natural Infrastructure Program for the Cayuga Cliffs Land and Water Protection Project, ID 9049. Resolution I, appropriating funds from the Natural Infrastructure Program for the Cayuga Cliffs Land and Water Protection Project, ID 9050. Resolution J, making a negative declaration of environmental significance in relation to resolution number blank of 2019, authorizing funding for the plantings at the Salmon Creek Stream Stabilization Project through the 2019 Tompkins County Stream Corridor Restoration and Flood Hazard Mitigation, ID 9043. Resolution K, authorizing funding for the plantings at the Salmon Creek Stream Stabilization Project through the 2019 Tompkins County Stream Corridor Restoration and Flood Hazard Mitigation Program, ID 9044. Resolution L, establishing the Tompkins County Climate and Sustainable Energy Advisory Board, ID 9046. Resolution M, authorization to sign drafts, checks, County Administrator, ID 8979. Resolution N, approving completed tax rolls and directing the executing and delivery of warrants, ID 8980. Resolution O, town and city budgets and printing of tax rates, ID 8981. Resolution P, authorization for finance director to make year-end transfers, appropriations, and budget adjustments as required, ID 8982. Resolution Q, authorization to disperse funds, county administration, ID 8983. Resolution R, authorization to participate in various contracts led by any government entity of the United States of America, ID 8984. Resolution S, delegating to the finance director of the County of Tompkins, New York, the power to authorize the issuance of and to sell $10 million revenue anticipation notes of said county in anticipation of receipt of state aid during the fiscal year of said county commencing January 1st, 2020, ID 8992. Resolution T, changes in positions, various departments, ID 9035. Resolution U, approval of county disadvantaged business enterprise goal for 2020 to 2022 for the Federal Transit Administration, ID 9030. Resolution V, establishing the Tompkins County Affordable Housing and Landlord Support Task Force, ID 9038. What? That one's off. And I have advisory board appointments. To the Advisory Board on Indigent Representation, Robert Lynch and Christopher Colosi. To the Criminal Justice Alternatives to Incarceration Board, Susan Cook. To the Traffic Safety Committee, Fernando de Aragon. To the Soil and Water Conservation District, Callan Space. To the Environmental Management Council, Michelle Henry, Anthony Xavier Arce. Is that right? Reggie Teasley, Catherine Hurlman, Stephen Nicholson, Peggy Ficken, Kate Darfler, Steve Bisson, Andra Benson. To the Water Resources Council, Elizabeth Thomas, Amelia Ali Jumbo, Lynn Leopold, Jonathan Negley, Steve Riddle. To the Planning Advisory Board, David Kay, David Herrick, Marcus B. Real, Emile Fournier, Benjamin Sandberg. To the Air Service Board, Alan Peterson, Heather McDaniel, and Ken Hodges. To the Youth Services Board, Kelly Sove and Lisa Campbell. And I think a necessary qualification for the chair of the legislature is you can read that long and make it sound not too boring. Please pull L2. Can we do that, Kathy? We're pulling L2. Thank you, Mike. Do you have laryngitis? Okay. All right. All in favor, can I get a motion on the consent agenda? Moved by Amanda, seconded by Leslin. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. So everybody in the audience can decide to go home if they're ready. All right. Jason, I think... If we're ready to... Sure. You were saying that for the... Mike is waiting for the bond note, but that was on the consent.
Yep.
What?
That was on consent.
Mike Hall. Is there
any...
Resolution A. Right. All right. Without objection, let's do Resolution A, and then I'll entertain any other discussions over it. I'm sorry, Frank, you're stuck. Katie, you might be stuck anyway. Okay. All right. Let's go to Resolution A. And who's the vice chair? I'm sorry, who's the vice chair? Annie Corman, Vice Chair of Facilities and Infrastructure Committee.
Thank you. I'd like to move DOC ID 9031, Award of Contract, Terminal Cafe, Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. And one of the reasons...
Annie, wait. Seconded by Mike Lane.
Oh, I'm sorry. So one of the reasons that this we're looking at one particular vendor for this is that it's since about 25 years ago that when Brian's Landing stopped being the vendor for the airport, we've had difficulty keeping any vendor at all. Consistently, so we're really happy that to be able to be working with Ithaca Coffee Company, and I know that people had some questions about this, so I'll open it up to comments.
Okay, thank you, Annie. Henry.
Yes, I'd like maybe Mike Hall to come up and just answer some questions about how long is this contract for?
Says it in here.
I call our airport director.
So we proposed two things. One is very short term till the end of this year so that we can have an anniversary starting 1 January 2020. And I believe it's a 3+2 award at that point, 3 years with a two-year option beyond that. We chose that term, as Legislator Corman mentioned. None of the airports in the region, not just Ithaca, but Elmira and Binghamton, have never had good food service. And I'm confident that this vendor has the business acumen to handle its responsibility. If I'm correct, then we'll have an opportunity to discuss whether or not we want to extend the contract beyond the initial award.
Henry, you had other questions?
So will the contract come up again in January?
No, this would be to award for 3 years, but the 3 years doesn't start till the 1st of January, and we need to have a contractor in place 2 weeks from now for ribbon cutting. So we decided that we would use a bootstrap, if you will, to get to 1 January, but we wanted an anniversary date that made sense, and we're so close to 1 January, and just figured, well, it's easier to count years than it is to count days of the month.
Was that it?
That's it.
Okay. Are we ready? Any other discussion?
Yes.
Leslie.
Were there other businesses that we approached or that put in for this?
We did. We approached any substantial business that offered this kind of service, and the one business that expressed a real interest in working with us was Ithaca Coffee. So it's been an ongoing discussion for over a year when the previous contractor left us. So.
Thank you.
Wait.
Henry?
I have a question. When did the previous contractor leave?
Previous contractor left, I'd have to stop and think about that off the top of my head, but it was about the time that we got into the construction, which is a little over a year ago, that we knew the previous contractor had not provided adequate service nor compensation, and we told them that they would not be continuing in the new terminal, that we needed to get adequate food service in the new terminal.
And is this the secured part or the unsecured part?
Both.
Both.
Yeah.
The new design has.
It's a pretty challenging situation, obviously. When you're in a hub, people are sitting around waiting for their connecting flight. What do? They eat and drink. In our airport, in order to be successful, you're going to have to draw from outside the airport community to provide service, to keep staff busy and the kitchen busy and what have you, between the departure pulses, of which there are kind of four: early morning, mid-morning, mid-afternoon, and the evening. So, and you asked the second part of the question. I'm sorry, it got away from me.
I just want to know the timing of when you got rid of the other vendor.
That was within the last 15 months, I would say, for poor performance.
And so there was while you were doing reconstruction, you didn't have any food service.
That's correct.
There's a vending machine.
Yeah, we had vending machines.
And since I mentioned I was up there last week, there's a cafe in the.
Oh.
Outside of security,
yeah.
And sort of the almost a restaurant and bar,
right.
Among the four gates toward in the new part, right?
Yeah.
And we've heard from some businesses up in the business and technology park that, gee, there's nowhere up here to eat. So I think that's what you're talking about drawing business during the day.
There's definitely a market that can be drawn, and without that market, it's going to be difficult for anybody to sustain a business based solely on the passengers. And where I started to go was you asked about both sides of security. We looked at the possibility that we could pass food through. Can't really do it. It's not practical. So we have two kitchens and two service areas, one on the secure side and one on the unsecure side. And that's a further challenge to a business to try to, balance those two things out.
Leslie and then Annie.
Mike, I'm sorry. I need to ask again, but before I go there, so there's just one space for a food vendor. For one vendor to operate both sides.
Our judgment was that had to be the case because, for example, on the secure side, there's just not the business that's going to be there to sustain a business, if you will.
And in the new design, only one restaurant type eatery thing. There's not room for another.
No, there are two. There's on both sides of security.
No, no, no,
but
no.
Yeah, no.
On the secure, on the unsecure side.
We had a discussion with New York about Taste New York, and they wanted to have a second sale point. And I did not think that was going to work from a business point of view based on the history of food service and airports our size in central New York. Taste New York worked with Ithaca Coffee, and they're going to share the sale point and the stock and what have you. So the state's happy because that was one of the conditions of the grant, and we're happy because we're not having competing interests when we aren't clear that we've got enough business for one at this point. That's going to have to be built over the course of the next year. And I do have confidence that our selected vendor, if anybody can make it work, they can. They're very astute business people. But, you know, to put two restaurants in, that would not work. That would be fratricide.
And just for clarification on my first question, airport management, you all went out and spoke to businesses. You solicited businesses who might be interested in contracting with the airport to do this.
We did. And one of the issues involves the diversity of the offering. For example, burgers and beer was not going to match the state requirements for a broad assortment of I Love New York kinds of things or Taste of New York kinds of things. So it's a pretty challenging bar, and one I think that if it's successful, we'll be very happy about, because you need a business that has not only coffee, sandwiches, a bar, but also something to take to the grandkids or, you know, the Taste of New York kinds of things, a broad offering of product. And that's really tough for somebody unless they have multiple outlets in the community and already have that sort of stock and an inventory.
Thank you.
Annie? I was also going to add about, I was very happy, Mike, that you were able to negotiate with the state rather than having two competing businesses in the airport, you know, where one hadn't been viable before. So to get that negotiated down to one, I'm actually very happy about that. And I also, for folks that might not know, in the midst of all the renovations that are going on up there that you have to supervise and figure out all the last-minute things that come up, trying to figure out how this company can be successful at looking at, you know, can they provide food to other people in that in the park there? How would they be able to park there and maybe not be charged? Could people get in and charge their electric vehicle? That's a prerequisite. I'm required to say electric vehicle at one point during a meeting, I think. So, you know, can people get in there and charge their electric vehicle and run in for lunch? So I appreciate all the behind-the-scenes conversations that we've had looking at how to make every part of the airport successful.
Yeah, you can bring your kids and they'll play on the playground while you have lunch.
All right.
Anna. Hi, Mike. I wanted to actually just thank you for two things that I think have been really important in the process. You have had a complete overhaul of your airport, and you and your team, and I know you're always about team, and I want you to go back and thank your team for me and for, I'm sure, my colleagues, that you've managed to keep the airport fully running while it has been dismantled and put back together again at the same time is not a small feat, and I don't think that has been recognized up to now, and I wanted to thank you for that. I myself have benefited, so I'm sure some of us have.
I thank you, but I also say that the many passengers, up 10% this year, that went through that construction site with a smile on their face in anticipation of something that we're going to see 2 weeks from now with the ribbon cutting is really what made it work. It's been a great community effort all the way around, and much better days very shortly ahead
once
we get the ribbon cut.
And the other thing I wanted to mention, I wanted to acknowledge Barbara Regenspan's comments. I know she's very passionate about this issue. Human rights, she dedicates a significant amount of her time to that, and thank her for that. And there have been many people who have spoken with you, but I wanted to thank you for taking all the extra time to speak with them. I know that you yourself come from a family where your father was an undocumented, you said, immigrant and worked his way to his being an American citizen through his service in the military, and thank you for his dedication and your dedication as well. So I know you understand this on a personal level, and you have made every effort to try and communicate, educate, and do outreach, listen, which has been very, very important, and do everything that you can to reduce the risk. And I appreciate that, because I think we're all a little apprehensive of what the federal government is doing in the context of immigrants right now. So thank you.
Well, I think we're very I think we're very fortunate to live in a community where people raise issues for consideration, and I just hope that our community will do everything we can to reach out to those law-abiding but undocumented residents in our community and help them remove that risk from their lives by getting them properly registered, taken care of, citizenship, all those kinds of things, because they live in risk every day. The more we can do to remove that risk, the better our community will be.
Hear, hear. Thank you.
Okay. Leslyn, still got something to...
I do. I'm sorry, I was trying to look back at my email. Before I went to MIA from Ithaca, did I not read something about Ithaca Coffee Company and some concerns, or am I making that up? And do we have any concerns? Should we be concerned? Am I making it up?
No.
Oh.
I was trying to look to see if I saw something in my email or where I saw that.
Yeah, I sent out an email the other day about the Times article, which talked about that there was a you're calling for a boycott of Ithaca Coffee Company because of the lack of unionizing. And then I asked Mike to check it out, and he responded with the email that the NLRB investigated Ithaca Coffee Company with regard to a complaint regarding unionization and absolved them of any legal wrongdoing. I then looked at the the website for NLRB, and the cases, there's two cases, the cases are still open, although it seemed like they resolved, they settled them. But they settled them with the repayment of wages to employees and the rehiring of another employee. So I'm not sure whether absolving them of any legal wrongdoing was, again, probably in connection with the settlement. They were resolved because they settled the case.
Well, I appreciate that, Henry. I know somewhere in the back of my head I recall seeing something, and I just wanted to make sure that there shouldn't be an issue of concern for us that we are engaging in a contract with a business that might be doing something that's concerning to our citizenry. So I just wanted to make sure.
Mike, did you want to add anything to that, or is that all?
No, I think this is the sort of journey that all businesses in our community are subject to. In the case of Ithaca Coffee Company, there are two minimum wages, for example, one for food service workers and one for everybody else, and they pay entry-level people the minimum wage for everybody else plus tips, and I'm sure that that's all I'll really add to it. I'm confident that that this is a solid business and an important part of our community. It's Julie's fundraiser tonight for Alzheimer's up at Ithaca College, and I think we've got a good community partner here. And like each of us in the community, as we go through time, we'll learn from each other and adapt, and I'm confident that they'll be a good partner in this relationship.
Shauna?
Can you tell me if the employees that will be working at the airport under Ithaca Coffee will be making a living wage, including those that are working in the kitchen?
We have not had a living wage in effect at the airport in the past. I would say that the minimum wage plus tips certainly gets in that neighborhood for food service workers. So I think that I'm comfortable with the situation. But to pay a living wage in food service is a real tough lift for entry-level people. Now, she has many employees, and many of them are earning beyond a living wage. living wage. It's the entry-level person who has an opportunity to be compensated by a minimum wage plus a gratuity for the quality of their service.
Henry?
My question was asked.
Okay. Are we ready to vote on Resolution A? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's, how many have we got here tonight? 12? 12. So that's it passes 10 to 2. All right. Thank you very much, Mike. I think, is that the last agenda item for you, I believe? All right. Then, Katie, I said earlier you're stuck. I didn't mean that. So I'm asking, are you here for L and V? That's the Energy Advisory Board, and the Affordable Housing Landlord thing is also under HED. Anyway, so let's do that. All right, let's go to Vice Chair of Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality, Anna Kellis, for Resolution L, and then as Chair of HED to take V.
Mm-hmm. I've got them both here.
Okay.
L, establishing the Tompkins County Climate and Sustainability Energy Advisory Board, ID number 90446. I so move.
Seconded by Ann Corman. That's packet page 121. Mike pulled it. So, Mike, do you want to try to say something about it?
I mean, I sent out a good email on it. So if you could just enter the email into the record, that would be great. If you could do that, Kathy, that would be great.
Kathy, you have the email.
I have the email button.
If you don't, I can resend it to you. But, I think it's redundant. I think we already have agencies that can do this. I mean, advisory councils that can do this. I think we have the expertise already in-house that can do this. And I think we're creating more work for staff, basically, that I don't think they – I would rather them have kind of do the work that's before them as opposed to creating more meetings for them to go to. So those are the main aspects.
Thanks. Thank you, Mike. I'm sorry you feel. I hope it doesn't hurt. Okay.
No, I just can't talk.
Okay, Anne, and then Mike.
I hear you. And I actually, one of the things that you brought up, and I want to acknowledge that it has been brought up in particular by the department that will be affected. They won't be affected because this is not a new committee, a new advisory board. But if we were to make a new advisory board, they would be affected. And we had a good conversation at PEAC, and we've had multiple conversations. I think there are many people here who feel the same way, that it's time for us to do a comprehensive evaluation of all our advisory boards and evaluate, their continued purpose, any overlap, efficiencies, impact on staff. I think all of those questions need to be addressed. So I just wanted to acknowledge that, and I respect that and appreciate it. I do want to acknowledge that this particular task force is actually not a new task force, and there has been extensive conversations with the department staff that currently staffs this and was involved in the crafting of the modified committee. I would note this is a transition from the energy task force, and there was a recognition that we needed to streamline it, we need to make it very efficient, and that was the lengthy conversations that we had about the number of people on the committee that were needed so that it can be very efficient and focused, and that advisory board was not complete with its work, and because we are dealing with escalating climate change issues, that this committee would continue to do specifically that work which it has already been tasked with. So I do just want to make the point that it is not a new task force, but a continuation with the blessing of the staff that would be staffing it.
Mike Lane.
Mike, I read your email, too. I agree with Anna. I think you raised some legitimate points about our whole advisory board structure, and certainly we have plenty of them, all for good reasons. But I certainly think that perhaps next year government operations might want to take a look at some of them. I can't imagine we can do them all in one year, for example, but just as we do with our policy review, it might be time to start doing that with our advisory boards.
Anna.
I just wanted to add one comment in some discussions that were made today, specifically in the context of how we would do this. And the first thought, of course, for me was, oh, well, this would be a GEO thing, but I want to throw it out there to everybody. Not everybody is intimately familiar with the advisory board needs of all of the committees. So it might be worthwhile, and I'll just throw this out there, to have a temporary committee like the Downtown Housing Committee or the Census Committee, where we have individuals from the legislature that come together to do a comprehensive evaluation, because I'm not sure that looking at individual ones separately will address the need for a comprehensive overhaul, potentially need for all of our advisory boards. So I think it might be worth thinking about that.
Okay. That's a good topic for January. Henry.
And didn't the city combine its boards because there are many boards that, well, people didn't show up at or didn't or unattended or whatever. So I don't really see a need to do this unless we know the advisory boards are not working.
Well, I think that's the point, is that we haven't sort of taken a broad look at these in a long time. And, yeah, we have a lot of different boards. They mostly serve very different functions. Some of them might be outdated altogether. Some of them might be combined. Maybe some of them, who knows, or are just fine the way they are. So I think that's not a topic for tonight. Let's move, if there's something about this particular task force, which I would reiterate, the energy task force that had its three-year term that is coming to an end at the end of December discussed at length what should succeed, if anything, the energy task force. And this formulation here and this resolution basically is what they came up with to replace them. So it's not a new board, it's a board. This replaces a board, a group that has been meeting for 3 years. And staffed for 3 years. So, did I see another hand? Okay. Are we ready to vote then? All in favor of Resolution L, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That passes 10-2. All right. And Anna, if you would take, even though it's not exactly, but Megan's not here,
good for it.
The resolution, now I've lost the number.
V.
I'm sorry?
V.
V, yes.
Establishing the Tompkins County Affordable Housing and Landlord Support Task Force, ID 9038A. I so move.
Seconded by Amanda.
Do you want to speak first?
The argument's the same, right?
Well,
so for every nicety that everybody just said on the last thing, you're adding another one. And so we're now going from six with 35 subcommittees. We're now going to go to eight with however many subcommittees are in each one of these things. So I don't know. I mean, if you think your staff has all this time, I guess they do. I don't know what to tell you.
Okay.
As I put in the email, our staff is really good, and you're kind of just putting more and more people to advise them. I'm like, I don't know. I would rather them do the not for lack of a better word, the grunt work or the grind work of actually working, as opposed to going to another meeting to get more advice on something they're already working on. So there you go.
All right, this
I sound like Mickey Mouse. It's really funny when I do this.
Packet page 147, and this is a very specific task, a short-term project.
What is short-term?
It actually says here, no longer than 6 months. Anna, you want to take this?
Yeah, I will. And I do want to reiterate, Mike, I just want to make sure that you do understand that the previous one is not a new one. Is not a new one. But I just want to make sure, because you said 6 to 8, I just want to make sure you do understand that that one is not a new one. And this one,
it's not,
I think.
Yeah, it's
okay.
From the six.
No, it's actually a transition from an existing one.
And that's what's really important.
What about the landlord one?
I'm getting it. I just, you know, there seems to be a misunderstanding, so I just wanted to make sure. But thank you. This one is not staffed by our staff. I'm going to repeat that. This one would not be staffed by county staff. I can say
they don't expect them to go.
They don't have to. They absolutely do not have
to. I'm saying you personally do not expect
them. They do not have to go.
So
it's not even relevant.
Operate separately from county government.
Okay.
So hold on.
Not an advisory committee at all.
It is a task force. A task force is also not subject to open meetings. Secondly, I do want to point out, and it's really important for everybody to understand, we had conversations during budget season, and we set $50,000 into contingent, specifically on the recognition that we were then going to connect with those who are stakeholders, get a recommendation from those stakeholders to give us a recommendation so that we could then base our decision of what we wanted to do with that money and have a vote on that. So this is actually a follow-up on the conversation that we had during budget season. This is simply just an action, a follow-through of what we had all agreed to. It's an action as part of that plan. Specifically, I wanted to note that the name is what it is because we do not want to superimpose our beliefs on stakeholders, but we really want stakeholder buy-in and input on exactly what they feel would be the best package or recipe for helping landlords, and specifically helping to maintain our existing affordable housing stock. What we don't want as a result of all of the state changes that have happened is to have the Community Housing Development Fund doing all this work, having us spend all this money to develop new affordable housing while the existing, smaller, older affordable housing is dropping off out of the bottom. And then we will end up with a net zero gain in affordable housing. We want to maintain the existing affordable housing that we have and have the opportunity to build so that we actually end up with a net positive. There have been substantial changes that have happened at the state level, including source of income. We have an insufficient number of Section 8 vouchers. And then we have insufficient housing so that when they do get the vouchers, they have 60 days to find housing, and we have many cases where they ultimately are not able to find that housing, and they lose their voucher, and they end up back at the bottom of the list. So the last thing I will say about this is that the Human Services Coalition will be staffing this. Kathy Schlather has been working on this intimately with me. Amy Hendricks helped out also in meetings to focus this resolution. Thank you so much, Amy. And here we are. So that's the background.
Okay. In short, it's to research and recommend appropriate tools to support Tompkins County landlords with a six-month maximum term of operation. Dan.
I just do want to mention that my reading of the open meetings policy is that this task force would be subject to it. Just, I think I mentioned that it's not, but it's any committee that's appointed by the legislature.
My understanding is that task forces, and Jason, maybe I'm wrong. I could absolutely be wrong on this. Or someone else here who remembers this. Task forces that are temporary, that are not advisory boards, are they under?
Jonathan's pointing at Amy because he happens to be in her chair for the next presentation.
I did not see you, Jonathan. So.
Way to pass the buck, Jonathan, but do you have any thoughts on
Jonathan, please. Because if I'm wrong, that's fine. Either way, it's still staffed by.
Basically, what you call the committee, whether it's advisory or whatever, doesn't really matter. Task force, it is what it is. Our policy, as you recall, is not that simple. It covers everything from advisory committees to not. It's just it covers them differently in terms of what notice they have to give, in terms of the minutes. So there's no yes, no. The policy covers everything. It just has different requirements.
Right. So I guess my question specifically is the task, would this task force be required to keep minutes for everything and have them published publicly and have the follow the full procedure that, say, a committee would have to follow?
Probably not. I mean, I'm not familiar with exactly what I did, but if it acts purely as advisory and has no specific powers, then it would be subject to, let's call it, the lesser duties under our
policy. My understanding was, okay, if it's not making a vote itself, but making only a recommendation, that was the distinction.
All right. Jason, then Dan, then Mike, then
the policy states that the meetings are open to the public, and that if you have a schedule, you would put those on the website and advertise them once. If you create a document in the process thereof, that would be subject to disclosure or forwardable document. It's not as the same as, say, a legislative meeting or a standing committee that requires due notice and so on and so forth. So if the meeting is held, it's open to the public, to those to attend, and that you have to at least put the notification on the website of when the scheduled meetings are.
Okay. Oh, we don't have to publish our agenda ahead of time and all many other things we do. Dan and then Rich.
Well, I mean, I guess we don't have to, like, keep going with this, but I have the policy in front of me, although I can't be sure it's the final one because we had so many versions, but I don't think this part changed. All meetings of all boards, committees, commissions, and other groups whose members are appointed by the legislature are subject to the public officer's law. So I think that was the key, was whether they're appointed by the legislature. That's why subcommittees didn't fall under it.
Rich.
My recollection was if a task force takes minutes, then they have to make them available.
Right.
And if they create documents, then they have to make them available. But if they don't, there isn't any document to obtain. My comment was on the composition of the task force, that it's not clear to me from the list at the bottom how many landlords would be. Two? Do you think that's sufficient given the impact it's going to have and the range of different kinds of landlords we have in our county?
Would you like to suggest that it be explicit and be a number?
I don't know. I don't want to get in the way, but it just seems like in order to get buy-in from the landlord community, you'd want to have them well represented.
Mm-hmm. I'm open to anything that the legislature here is interested in. Annie brought up that she would like a rural representative at least, so we are looking to have one urban and one rural right now.
Okay, if I could suggest that we leave it open. We have 8 categories and 11 apparent slots. I hope we can leave some flexibility here as this kind of gets rolled out. And I'm also pretty sure we have a lot of business, and we don't have to agree to everything 100%. With that, Annie?
I was just going to add that some of the positions for the task force are people from agencies that help people get vouchers and then help them try and find housing. So for me, that felt that was representative of that aspect of it versus just landlords. Because we're not, for me anyway, I'm not looking at just helping landlords. It's helping people who need housing, so it seems to me broad enough of the people, the different aspects of helping people find housing.
Okay. Are we ready to vote on Resolution V? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That passes 10-2. All right. Katie, are you sticking around for anything else? Okay. I know you're going to really, really miss Jason and Amy's song and dance, but all right. Thank you all very much thank you, members of the Community Health Board, for wading through that, those discussions. And first, Jason, if I would ask you to introduce our members who are here, which would be, we're grateful for them for joining us.
Sure. We have a few doctors in the house. Maybe, actually, if you'd like, I don't know if you want them to come up because you might be talking anyway. So would you guys like to join the table at the end there?
Absolutely. Come on up to the table. And, Kathy, you want to put the screens down while we're waiting?
So we have one member from the Public Health Board, Dr. Evelyn, two members from the Tompkins County Mental Health Board, Kaki Wunderlich and Sheila McNeary. I'm sorry. All three of them were members of the task force along with Shauna. There were three members from each board, both the Mental Health and Public Health Board.
Thank you very, very much for being part of this lengthy deliberation. We really appreciate your expertise and your support and your help with this.
Thank you. So what we're going to do this evening, Amy and I are going to go through a presentation of the process that this task force went through. As I mentioned, it comprised of three members from each board, the chair, just happened to be the chair and the vice chair from each board, as well as another member, as well as Shauna Black, our chair from the Health and Human Services. Amy and I, and as well as Autumn out of my office, supported the task force, and they met steadily. I want to say without missing a week, every other Wednesday since May, really up until mid-November, dedicated group, 2 to 3 hour meetings every Wednesday, and a lot of what took place for us was following that meeting, we would prepare information and try to get it out to them a week in advance. So it was literally probably something we touched in our office every week to prepare, so they had good dialogue and good deliberation. So we'll go through a little bit of the process, talk a little bit about some of the recommendations that came from that process, and then next steps. And I'm sure if there's any questions, feel free to ask the three members that are here, and they'd be happy to talk about it. But it was a good group, very dedicated, that came on a regular basis and really spent a lot of time on it. So we'll start off a little bit with just a section, resolve sections from the resolution that was passed in 2015. It was a pretty lengthy resolution that was amended several times from the floor that outlined kind of the task for this task force, so to speak. And that was after 3 years of a pilot period with the joint leadership, there would be an evaluation of the administrative merger that took place, of what we would refer to as the administrative partial merger. And that really broke down to three areas of evaluation. One was the current status, which is the administrative partial merger, or what we'll call, from a status quo perspective, the shared leadership model. That's as it is today. There was an evaluation of a full merger of the leadership and operations. And then the last piece, or the third piece of the review, is a separation of the leadership and operations into what we would probably consider a pre-2015 model of a separate mental health and a separate public health department. Here are the members of the boards. A little joke about doctors. There was an inside joke we had. I inevitably left off acknowledging someone as a doctor at the meeting, and that wasn't let up through the whole summer. So before I guess I'll start in May, and really April, May, when the discussion took place at the Health and Human Services committee meeting, we started with the first meeting of the task force and really trying to identify the areas that the group would look into. And what came from that first meeting was a pretty substantial list of about 10 or 12, about 10 maybe areas. These are four of the areas with some subgroups, and here's the remaining areas. So these were areas to be explored, and what the task force wanted to do is they wanted to go back to the Mental Health Board, the Community Service Board, as well as the Board of Health, and say, hey, listen, here are the areas that we've identified to look into. Do you agree with them? And you know, we went both, Amy and I went to both a community service board meeting and then also to a board of health meeting and received that feedback. So we gave them this list in advance, but received feedback from them over a month's period of time saying, we think this should be, maybe be explored a little bit more. We should add this section. And this was the comprehensive list of, I think, 13 points that the task force then, after input from both boards, said, all right, we're going to start to look into this and dive into this. I would also add that as part of this process, Amy and I attended every Board of Health meeting or Community Service Board meeting from May to date to give them an update as to the progress of the task force. So we attended every meeting to one of us to provide update as to what the progress is, just so they were fully informed of where they were in the process.
So one of the areas that was really important to both boards as well as the members of the task force was actually hearing from the employees impacted by this. And so we did that in a couple ways. One of the ways was to actually have interviews with some of those employees. We also talked with, there's a couple other people on here, we talked with some other communities and counties that have looked at this or have done this. So the two counties up there are Livingston and Dutchess. And then you'll also see that we spoke with Jonathan a little bit about what some of the legal implications were if we were to look at a merger and how that would look going forward. Of all of those interviewees, we asked the same questions. So we met with all of the direct reports from the mental health and public health departments, asking them the same questions about leadership structure, successes that could be possible with further integration, further separation, and really heard from them what they were seeing and what they could see as the possibilities. They were very honest with us, and so all of those interviews were conducted by members of the task force and myself, and so they could really have that opportunity to chat with us. And so some of that information, of course, is in the report that you've received. In addition to that, we also surveyed employees, board members, and the community. We also had the climate survey information as well, and so the task force reviewed that too, in addition to all of this. All of the board members and employees were asked to do that. You can see we had a pretty good response rate among the employees, so about 50% of the employees from both departments responded. The breakup was, I think there was one more from one department, I can't remember what it was, but it was pretty much split on both mental health and public health employees. Board members, we also asked to talk about what their impressions were of going forward and the current situation, and then the community survey. The community survey had less responses. I will tell you that some of the members from the different organizations that we reached out to had contacted me kind of on the side to say, you know, I'm happy with what service we get. We haven't seen a difference, though, because we would never see a difference. We work with the same organizations, and it's not as much for us. And then there were also some that really spoke to that as well. So the response rate was a little lower than we had hoped for there, but we did hear from them, if not through the form.
I forgot to mention before I go forward that the report, the final report, is in the agenda packet. I think you all received copies of it. If I go back to, I believe, the beginning of November, we distributed a draft report to both boards and then had a joint meeting with both boards in which we gave this presentation, received feedback from both boards, and then continued to receive feedback from staff members. We had an open forum to do that, and then finalized the report. I think the task force met two additional times, finalized the report, and then the report was issued, was sent out to the legislature. When the draft report was sent to the both boards, it was also sent to all of staff along with the communication. It was also sent to all of you, so you were aware that the draft report was out there. And then when the report was finalized, it was sent to the boards, it was sent to the legislature, and was also sent to all of staff. So throughout the process, we've been able to keep in communication with the staff on a regular basis so they knew what the status was and what was being considered. And I also had an open forum to provide feedback through an anonymous contribution through a monkey survey that was open to do that. So what I'll get into now are really the three areas that were reviewed and what recommendations came from that. And I think it's safe to say early on that the task force came to the conclusion that maintaining the status quo was not the best option to consider. And that was probably the first conclusion they came to in this process, primarily because there was an obviousness that the joint leadership model only allowed so much shared responsibility or initiative without having additional authority to be able to make a full merger of certain initiatives or to be able to share resources fully. So it kind of created a state of paralysis. And this was really seconded and kind of, I would say, hammered home with us when we had feedback both from the climate survey as well from the employees, basically saying it seems like we're in a state of paralysis. We can't move forward. We can't move backwards. We're uncertain about the future. There isn't clear vision. We need a decision to be made. That was what came really from the staff, I think a little bit more so than we initially expected. And that was both in the last year's May climate survey as well as a survey that was recently done that Amy just mentioned. So this was not recommended, maintaining the current arrangement as it is today. Then, and how this process really worked is the task force really did not discuss recommendations until really the end of the collection of data collection process, and they were really able to take in it all in. And that was really a final meeting or two where recommendations were discussed. The other element that wasn't recommended was separating both departments. And this is then just snapshots of some of the reasons why, but for the primary reasons that it was viewed as taking a step backwards and not being able to focus on the whole health of an individual as holistically as they would if they were merged. There was also issues that some of the synergies that were created would have to be undone because additional staff maybe have to be hired in both departments to support those areas moving forward. And in all, the task force really felt that from a quality of care perspective, a lot of the vision to trying to achieve a much more holistic approach wouldn't be able to be achieved with two separate departments. Lastly, then, the task force unanimously recommended that merging both departments in a full merger was the optimal ability or optimal decision to make moving forward, simply because being able to integrate the departments further from a service delivery perspective, being able to identify whole health perspectives and being able to serve the clients that have a lot of overlap between both departments under one vision and a collective vision is a much more successful model than a collaborative one, so to speak. So this came out of all the process that they talked about. And then really the next questions that came from is how do you move forward from that point on?
So the task force was charged really with looking at the models. And what they discovered as they were looking at the models is we're building a framework but may not know all of the details in that. And so in some of these next steps and opportunities, they were able to look at what the big picture would be and not necessarily how we get there yet. And that, I think, was a struggle for some of the task force at times or for some of the others because they're looking at the big picture and not really knowing all of the details, nor should they, because it would be up to the departments to get into that. So when they started to talk more big picture, we started talking about the opportunities of the merged model and what that could look like. They saw that having one vision of mental and public health would actually help the client or the consumers because they really know that the vision is about supporting their whole health. It's not separating it out. It could lead to changing some of the stigmas around some of the things that are associated with both departments and really focused on the individual. The other piece was organizational silos. And so how do they work together and continue to work, not so much as a collaborative model, but really together? And there was some discussion about that. What does that really look like? Having someone so you know the different services provided between the two agencies, really understanding who the people are providing those services and being able to talk about that with your clients. A piece of this, too, that we knew going into it is there are two buildings right now. And what does that mean under this merge model? What came very loudly to, I think, the task force as well as Jason and I was there's a lot of opportunities for having two buildings, that there's service provision could be provided at both buildings. You could have a clinician at one building, you know, certain days of the week that is providing it. You could set up appointments in a way that allows that if you're there for one appointment, you could actually see multiple. We also found from the staff that not everyone likes going to either building. And so we serve a rural and a city community, and there is reasons why you may not want to go to one of those buildings or the other. So this would provide an opportunity to be seen more in a place that you feel supported. So there was a lot of options there and a lot of opportunities that came really from the staff and as we look through this. Yeah.
I'll just add one thing to that. One of the things that that both departments are starting to realize is their client base is very much the same and overlaps. And this, you know, having the option to go to both buildings serves both, I think, a physical location benefit to certain types of clients, but also can allow a treatment team to be put together to provide treatment to that to those individuals that overlap now to the two departments getting different services on a much easier basis. This, I think, was one of the bigger surprises we didn't anticipate in terms of the feedback, particularly from the staff when they talk about the two separate locations.
And the staff also see the opportunity for being able to work in two locations. So that was interesting, too, to come out of, you know, there could be opportunities for them, and there was some excitement there about that. The other piece is both departments do a lot of planning. They've started to have conversations, and there's some overlap with planning, but to actually integrate those plans and look at how we can use those strategies together. There's also some discussion about increased efficiencies and revenues, reinvesting those efficiencies back into the service providers. I think they shared with Jason many times that if there was efficiencies achieved, they didn't want it to go back to county administration or to the general coffers. It would go back to that. There's also some changes that we discussed a little bit about how payment is working within these organizations, and there's an entire push on how we do payments, and so there's some opportunities there as well that could be realized if we were to merge the two departments. As far as challenges, there are challenges with all of this. So we know that developing vision and mission statements and sharing one vision doesn't just happen. So there's a lot of work to be done on that. Another piece is a redefined chain of command. So under a merged model, you have a uniform leader. However, there needs to still be the content experts. And so what does that look like? What does that look like with deputies and with others that really have that content expertise? How does that work going through that? Modes of communication, while we did hear about the opportunities of two departments, there's also some challenges there. How do we make sure that we are communicating across that? How do you ensure that each of the different divisions understands what they're doing and how they can work together? There has been some of that already with public health. A lot of the divisions in public health do very distinctive things, but have an understanding of what the services are within that department. So there are some models that they can pull on, but that's going to be a challenge. And then the harmonized chart of accounts, I believe we kept that on there because we like the harmonizing of the chart of accounts. But there is a challenge with there are two departments that work with different entities, and how do we make sure that they continue to do that? So while certain things could be merged, there would still have to be some separation in certain areas, and we realize that.
So the task force, understanding, I think, the vision that they saw and the opportunity they saw, I'd outlined a series of next steps to be considered should you move forward with the recommendation that was being made. And they outlined them here, and there's a few others on the next slide, but I'll go through them briefly. One is to develop a team that would be responsible for outlining and really identifying how to implement a merged department. And this would be a team comprised of both staff members from both current departments, both up and down the chain of command, so that you have both practitioners and service delivery folks along with the supervision together to try to identify how do you implement a merger of both departments. Identify a name and the brand in the community. What would this be called, and what's that brand going to be? That kind of goes a little bit hand-in-hand with the shared vision and mission. What's the value set that this new entity or this new department is going to take on? Defining and implementing the new organizational structure. So, again, this is part of the defining the chain of command. How is that going to work? Which I think leads in very, very, very quickly into clear communication. communication and responsibilities. And I think communication was something that was stressed by the task force several times, that moving forward, over-communication is going to be critical so that the workforce understands what's going on. The biggest, I think, some of the biggest questions we had from folks, employees, is how is this going to impact me as an individual, which would be expected. You would expect anybody to ask that question when we're talking about merging departments. I want to back up to one thing about the word merger. Early on in this process, the task force spent, I want to say, the better part of a good meeting about what does the word merger versus integration mean, and I think we hit it. They hit it head on in the beginning of the report, saying basically they view a merger in this sense as what it is both departments coming together. It is not, the stereotypical viewpoint of merger may be that one is taking over another or one is replacing another, and that is not the case at all. They're working together. They're coming together for a unified vision, a unified series of values. So they wanted to use the word merger right off the bat and clarify what that means from the onset versus, the word integration and what does that mean, and is it a means to avoid the word merger, so to speak. So they had that head on. One other thing in here is to discuss with the regulatory authorities. So there's discussion that has to happen at the state, whether it's about Department of Health, whether it's Office of Mental Health, as some of the regulatory hurdles that they may have to get over, get through, or navigate around in order to make something like this happen. Some of the other items identified by the task force is create that shared culture, that shared service culture. Again, this, I think, goes back to the vision, again, and the mission. And going through a planning process that's going to support that. Review the opportunities where the back office operations. And this is where you've started already to get into a little bit of work over the past 3 years, whether it's fiscal coordination, quality assurance, outreach. These are all areas that they've started to share, but a full merger would allow for a much greater level of integration of those services for one department. The opportunities for different licensing models, this has to do with the clinic and some other licenses that have to be sought out, and are there opportunities to expand those licenses? On this, again, I think piggybacks on the regulatory discussion with the state. Opportunities and challenges of the two physical locations. Again, I think this was one of the biggest things that we didn't expect to see, the amount of folks that had some great ideas about the use of the two physical locations and it not being an impediment but being an asset. And provide regular briefings, obviously, to the board and to the legislature as they go through this process to outline it. That's the end of the recommendation, and what we did, taking that recommendation from the task force, is we then drafted a resolution, meaning Amy and I drafted a resolution and presented it to the Health and Human Services Committee about basically reciting a lot of the steps that were taken, reciting the recommendations, and suggesting that that you move forward with the recommendation and that full implementation of the merger take place no later than, I believe, July of 2021, 18 months. So allows 18 months of an implementation to take place for the new department to start. And that's the end of the presentation.
Thank you very much, Jason and Amy. And I just wanted to open this up. And Dr. Evelyn or Ms. Wunderlich or Ms. McHenry, if you had anything to add, if you would like to say any, offer anything, your own thoughts.
The Board of Health did meet this afternoon and unanimously are recommending the recommendation. The Community Services Board was scheduled to meet last night and for obvious reasons did not meet. We are meeting next Monday.
All right. And Health and Human Services at your meeting on Friday at 9 o'clock. And Shauna, you'll be looking at the resolution. That's on your agenda, right?
That's right.
Okay. Thank you all. Discussion, questions? So we're not asking for any kind of vote here, but this is an opportunity to talk about this this important step. Rich, Amanda, Anna, Henry.
I just note that this is this was a really thorough report and very well written and obviously reflected a ton of work. So thank you.
Amanda.
I agree with that. and thank you for the presentation. I guess one of my questions is, how do you know if it works? How are you going to measure in a couple years if this is working? or not?
We briefly talked about what are the measurements of success, and some of the quality assurance measures that have started to be taken place under primarily under the mental health department, and that are starting to expand into the public health department. I think part of this implementation has to be just that, creating some performance measurements to understand what does success look like and why, and some of that will be around individual programs. I think some of it will yet to be created around patient outcomes. Because you have an overlap. We did have a discussion today with Legislator Klein a little bit about this, and he brought up a great point that you can very easily foresee the Department of Social Services working its way into a discussion about the whole health of an individual and how some of the services provided to individuals under social services are probably some of the same clients that both mental health and public health are seeing. And I agree with that. I think that over time you'll start to see that incorporate into this discussion. So I think to answer your question directly, I think part of the implementation team's task is to identify some of those performance measurements and metrics. And I think some of it's going to have to be around patient outcome to the extent that you can influence it.
Annie, then Henry, then Dan, then Mike Lane.
Thank you. I also thought it was a very excellent report, easy to read, and but yet still gave us a ton of great information to help us to see what you came up with. And so to me, it really makes sense to do a merger. I worked in healthcare for 22 years in occupational therapy, and about half that time in mental health, and then in other various settings. And my first job was at Willard Psychiatric Center. And so to work with people in an institution that was built, it was first called Willard Asylum for the Insane. And however many 100 and something or 200 years ago when that was started, people with mental health, the stigma upon people who have mental health issues, of people being put in institutions and being forgotten, abandoned, forgotten. And there were some people there that had been there 60 years. And so I was there at the time when we were integrating people back into the community. And so to see, fast forward to now, when we're looking at merging these departments and looking at the person more holistically and assessing and treating the whole person, I'm very happy to be here and play some small part in seeing this happen. And the only question that I had was, I know when we transitioned from Willard, people being out in the community, that a lot of people lost their jobs, and so I was just wondering if we had a sense of, are there going to be any people that are going to be losing their jobs?
Yeah, we briefly talked about that, but I don't think that was not anything that we foresaw happening on any level. You have, in fact, depending on, I think, the service needs, what we're starting to see as it is today is, you're having an increase in mental health service demands in the community. Part of this discussion really foresaw no change in staffing, any reduction in staffing. There have been changes along the way over the past several years. As positions have been vacated, they have been changed in terms of function. And that may continue to happen. There may be some change in functionality of positions. But, it was very clear, particularly I think when we spoke to Livingston County, they did their merger for financial reasons. And they were pretty blunt about saying, number one, the outcomes we achieved were not financially based. They were actually service-based. So they were very happy that that happened. And secondly, I think point-blank said, if you're doing this for financial reasons, don't. A, you won't achieve that much benefit in terms of cost savings, and it's not for the right reasons. And they did that. They based that comment off of their experience. They felt that they got really better service outcomes than they did financial outcomes, but they were very pleased that the service outcomes were what they were. I think they've even expanded to three locations now in Livingston County,
right.
In terms of locations across the county to be able to provide services to residents. So as far as we were concerned, this is not a cost. This was not triggered due to saving money, and that wasn't part of the discussion and the analysis that we did so far.
Okay, thank you.
Henry.
Jason, and maybe the other people too, did you ever do any surveys from other counties? I know you had the two counties that you talked to. Did you ever do any other surveying of other counties in New York State to see how they dealt with this issue or dealing with the issue?
So we didn't do surveys. We did look at what counties had clinics, what counties have standalone mental health and public health. What gets really challenging and interesting is everyone does it a little differently. And so not all counties look the same. You know, you have in Onondaga County, you have merged services that go in different directions, and they shift regularly. So we didn't do that survey. What we did do is look at how many clinics there are and had a few discussions with the directors of both Livingston and Dutchess counties, but we didn't do surveys across, no.
Okay. And neither of you guys did surveys either from the Board of Health or the Community Service?
We didn't do any surveys, but we did get a list of the mental health service clinics in all the counties in New York, and only 35 of the 70 or so? 62 counties actually had a mental health clinic. So in those other counties, either there's no service at all, or it's being provided by some other entity outside of the county.
Also, I just have and it's sort of off Ann's question. I've asked you this before, that the quality assurance people, there are three at mental health. I assume that they're quite busy. If you then combine it with, you know, public health, won't you have to add more? Because, again, I assume people are working up to their potential. And so if you add another merger onto them, does it double or does it, you know, 50% add to their work? So you have to hire more people?
That's a good question. So several things. I think partly the quality assurance team for mental health has had some beginning conversations with public health around areas of performance metrics. So that's started a little bit, and they've been able to provide some support. It's very possible that through attrition, that, as I said, a position becomes vacant, it's restructured to add a quality assurance onto that component. So it's possible there could be an addition position added, but through a changing of a vacated position. Right now, I don't think we foresaw hiring a whole bunch of a staff to do exactly what you're saying, because I think part of it has to be played out. I think performance metrics has to be grown into over time. Departments or divisions play a role in this just as much as the individuals with the data. So how data is measured, what mechanisms it's used to measure through isn't necessarily all done by that QI team versus the analysis of it. So I think your point is well taken. Otherwise we'd have people, you know, essentially not doing work. I don't think that's the case.
Right.
I think this is something as they grew slowly into with mental health, they'll grow slowly into public health. And there are also different opportunities for portions of positions to be reimbursed through different state funding mechanisms as well. So I think we also have to entertain what does that look like and how does that look like moving forward. So I think to answer your question, no, I don't think there's any intention to drastically increase staffing in that situation. I think over time we'll be able to know the greater demands as to what, you know, what does quality assurance look like in the public health department.
Okay. Just one other question. You said the percentage of client overlap that you mentioned tonight. Do you know the percentage, or do you have an idea of what the percentage is?
I don't off the top of my head, but I'm sure we can probably give a ballpark as to what we think there's overlap of clients. I know just on our brief conversations, we didn't get into details, but we can nail down a little more. I think the initial comment was there was a lot more overlap than we initially anticipated.
All right, Dan, Michael, and then Anna.
Thank you. A couple of things I want to point out in the report for maybe people that didn't read every page or whatever, didn't absorb some of this. First of all, it does actually say in the report that we expect that this merger will cost more. So just one thing to be aware of, right? This is a budget increase. Okay. Another point that I really noticed was about the employee survey. It's really a minority of the employees that are in favor of the merger. If you add up the people who are opposed to it, that feel like the department should fully separate, and those that had no opinion, it's 64% for mental health employees and 59% for public health. For all respondents, 59% oppose it or are not supportive of it. So it just, it's a big red flag for me. You know, if the employees are not, the majority of the employees are not in favor of it, I really wonder why. What I really need to get on board with this, and it looks like me getting on board kind of doesn't matter. I've sent a lot of support for this. It's just more detail about what this actually looks like. I actually feel like this report is quite vague. I really don't feel like there's much substance, you know, substantive. This is what would actually happen. This is what things would actually look like. This is how it actually work. Although I had a good conversation with Frank Krupa today, and he did start to give me some better understanding of, you know, what this actually might look like in reality. That list that's up there, and there were two slides for it, next steps. What I'd be interested in is actually seeing those questions answered before we decide whether to merge or not. To me, that's the proper order to do things, that we really flesh these out to the best that we can, which will really start to paint a picture of what things actually look like. And that's when I could make a better decision myself about whether we should merge or not.
All right, before I go to Mike, Lane, Anna, and then Shauna, I would want to point out that in your email a couple days ago, Jason, maybe it was Wednesday, Jason provided the integration improvement example that a perspective of a family with a 2-year-old child with a moderate neurological diagnosis. This was something... And I asked Kathy to have this printed and put in your red folders tonight. Jason, do you want to just talk about this for a minute? Because I think it's important. It's in response to a question Dan asked at the Health and Human Services Committee meeting.
Yep. I mean, this is an example of this is actually an actual example one of our employees brought forward as to what they saw and how a merged department could work better based on their personal experience. Their personal experience, it's not actually our county departments. They live in another county, but this is an actual experience that they have and their family that they went through. So, we asked them to put it on paper and identify it for us to kind of show a real life example of what could be benefited from a merged department and opportunities that could come from a more fluid treatment plan and a more holistic approach. So this is a live example of one example that we think could take place, and it's a real example.
Thank you.
I would just add one thing, a point of correction. The report does talk about how it would cost more, but I think an important piece of discussion that isn't maybe captured in this report that took place with the task force is that it would cost more money if you didn't do it, based on better treatment that could be provided to clients through this merged model. So I think that was something that the task force talked about at length, I think, in one of the meetings, that this may cost more, as is anything moving forward, but it would cost more money by not doing the merger. And is that my recollection correct of the task force?
Yes.
All right. Mike Lane, Anna, then Shauna.
I read the report. I thought it was very good. I've read a lot of reports over the years serving on this legislature, and I think this is up there among the very best. For a lot of the reasons that Rich and Ann have already said. Dan, I'm trying to figure out exactly why you thought it was vague. They were trying to bring together some new ideas here to try to talk about the combining of services and this holistic approach. I don't know how much more specific you can get on a lot of things like that when you're trying to crack a nut as large as that. And the other thing I wondered about when you said that a majority of the employees did not favor it, you were adding the no opinions. But couldn't the no opinions also be added to the other side? I look at it like independent voters, and they're all over the place, which side. You can't really say who they're going to support one way or the other. So I just kind of wondered about that comment.
Yeah, I found that. I think you're talking about packet page 15. There's a table at the bottom, and I mean, it says unsure or had no opinion. I really don't think it's fair to characterize those as opposed to a merger.
I didn't say opposed.
Well, okay. All right, Anna?
Yeah, a few comments and then just two questions. One of the things, Jason, that you've said that I really appreciated is that this is not about efficiencies. I know, Shauna, you've brought this up multiple times, and I've really appreciated it, and it was something that was important for you, that this is about quality of service. And both of you have said that this is not about efficiencies. And it ties in with, I think, the grant, Frank, that you all in the department pushed for and got last year, which is to focus on social determinants. That is all about recognizing the whole person and the whole experience that they're having and recognizing that there are many aspects of their lives that affect their health outcomes. And I think that this is sort of another step in that direction of adding that. And everything I've heard, very much appreciate that. So for me, the cost question is irrelevant. That it is potentially an increase in our budget. If the focus is, and the outcome, as Amanda notes, is a measured increase in health, quality of health, that's worth an increased cost, I think, to the community, because that will ultimately help people be active, engaged members of our community. So I just wanted to note that, and I appreciated it. The next steps for me, I would suspect, and I guess this is a question or a comment, it's easier to invest for us significant amounts of money in our budget to doing these next steps if we have a secured outcome that we know we're going for. So I feel good about giving you direction, clear direction, and say, yes, work towards merger, therefore we want you to take these next steps and we're willing to invest in them. I had one question, I guess, for you, Khaki, about we heard about the health board, the community services board. Do we have a sense of where they stand in support of this yet, the final report? Have you met yet, or that's still?
We haven't met on the final report. We're meeting again next Monday. We got canceled last week.
Okay, then that's fine. And then my question is really for Jason, a little bit of a sense of how this would roll out if we were to do a merger. It obviously can't be overnight. So if you could, give us a little bit more of the length of time, at least, that you think that it would take.
Well, I think, and it's in the resolution that's before HHS, we identified an 18-month period, an 18-month period to plan and implement.
Yeah, but I guess I'm wondering more if, I wasn't sure if that 18-month was to plan it all in place or if that would include starting to shift departments and moving, I was just trying to get a sense of that.
I think also this regardless is going to happen in, personally, without having much conversation with Frank, but knowing this large of a merger would probably have to happen in certain phases and certain lumps. So there would probably be the first discussion or the first period of planning initially would be what's going to happen first, second, and third, and what are the impacts and what are the potential things that have to happen simultaneously for a variety of different reasons. So I think the answer to your question is that we think 18 months would be the ability to say the new department is fully functioning. functioning as one department in 18 months. I think some of that will happen prior to that, depending on certain needs of individual divisions, and some of it may be a little bit later, depending on certain things. For example, if there's regulatory approvals that have to take place, that may dictate some more timeline based on the state's approval of something.
I mention it only because 18 months seems quick to get from beginning fully functioning one department.
So the reason 18 months was there is actually something that we heard loudly from staff when we met with them, as well as their surveys, is that a lot of our staff, and I think we talked about this under the shared leadership model, has been in limbo. So they can't really go forward, but they don't know if they're going back. And so they were looking for a clear decision and direction and how it would happen. And I think two or three of the people we interviewed said, we really need to know when this is going to happen and when it's going to be realized. So the task force went with the 18-month mark, knowing that the vision would be shared across the organization and it would be, I think, branded as one department. There will still be other things that will go further, and I think there are things that probably the employees haven't even thought of yet, and as they continue, you're going to continue to have more of this merging and integration. But that's where that 18-month came from, was really from the employees saying, we just need to know what direction we're heading and how quickly we're going to get there. So I think that's something that's probably a moving target as they start to go through this process. I know Anna mentioned the, Kresge Foundation grant, which was developed to do some strategic planning. No matter what the outcome of this is strategic planning with either one department or a shared department. I think that is laying some of that foundation. So there's some of this work already being done, as well as the shared leadership model gave some of this work as well. It just could be undone if needed. I think what this provides is the direction, and that's why the 18 months seems feasible to at least realize the brand and the identity of one organization.
Shauna.
So I just wanted to touch on a few points. I think whenever we talk about the budget, every year we vote on it and we can see the numbers. In looking at what we're interested in moving forward with here, it's hard for us to project what our budget next year is going to look like, what it's going to look like in 18 months or 2 years or 5 years. Whenever we talked about opening up the services and having more social workers or more therapists located at our location on Brown Road, or even having our existing staff going to Brown Road, I think these are certain services that we should offer as a county. But I think whenever we do that, we're expanding the pool of people that we can reach. I know that I live in the Northeast area, and my neighbors are not coming downtown for therapy. They will not deal with the parking. They will not deal with the traffic. We don't really have much, great bus service where I live. And so that's really not an option for them. And to have a therapist who might be able to accommodate their schedule in the Northeast area or off of Brown Road is really, really ideal. So, I don't see us drastically changing the personnel that we have, but we could, in fact, see an increase in that. I think what's also important to realize is that people that come through our mental health, they're billable clients, and so we are receiving reimbursement from people that walk through the door. So it's not like we're going to be losing tons of money by staffing and not getting paid. The other thing that that I'm concerned about is the statement of the majority of staff don't want it. It was very, very clear whenever we did the interviews that the staff do want it, and they are tired of being in limbo. They're tired of not knowing what's going on. And in fact, out of the, I think we interviewed 10 or 15 department heads, maybe that's not right.
12.
There was only one that was a bit apprehensive about that. Whenever we talked more and more about it, they were excited to move forward and be part of this change. Whenever we talked or received information from our other staff, there was definitely a group of people that were ready to move forward. There were people that just had no opinion. And, I think to lump that into people that are saying no, as you mentioned, Mike, Mike, I don't think it's really representative of what's going on here. And then I will speak of my own experience. I know Jason passed out this form here that talks about a moderate kid that has neurological diagnosis. I also had two kids that were in early intervention, and we did receive services at Brown Road as well as in my community, and it would have been very, very nice to have a social worker that was available at Brown Road in one location so that I could have gone from one appointment to another, as it would have been, I'm sure, convenient for people that live in the city that receive mental health services to have access to people that are doing early intervention. So I just want to put that out there. Early on in the process, we did receive some concerns. There were some concerns from the Community Services Mental Health Board. There were a few people that I've met with along the way. After having that discussion and talking with them about the process, about this task force, the time that we've put into it, I think people have really kind of come full circle. They won't necessarily maybe agree with every point of this, but I will be the first to admit that entering into this task force, I was probably the most resistant, because I did not want mental health to be swept under the rug. That was my biggest concern, was that I did not want them to be neglected, and I also didn't want services cut, because I know that in many communities, they're kind of like the ugly stepchild, and so that was my biggest concern. And as we talked about this, as we brought forth our preferences and our goals and our visions, I can honestly say, after spending 6 months with these very kind people, I think that's actually going to be the opposite of what's going to happen with the mental health. And I think the conversation has been very honest. At times it's been very raw. But I think that this is actually going to put mental health at the forefront. And that's where it needs to be.
Thank you, Shauna. So second or third bites, Henry and Annie, can we be sort of quick?
Sure. Jason, did you ever consider having sort of a shared leadership, doing the back, combining back office operations, but having two separate commissioners? Because the shared leadership did not have that, right? Frank did not have the power to combine all the back office operations.
Some of it is. Some of it is right now. And I think while some of it could be achieved, there was a threshold on where more couldn't be achieved without clear direction and clear authority to do so. So I think some of the, like the financial coordination, is starting to move in that direction, and some of it can be, but it can't move forward without a full authority to say, yes, we're going to merge. So I think, to answer your question, yes, it's partially being done now, but it's still the sense of paralysis because there's not a full authority given to do it completely.
Annie.
Thank you. I just want to, I think, hopefully clarify what I believe I heard my fellow legislator Dan Klein say. I believe what he said was the majority of people, of staff that were surveyed, 59% did not say that they were for it. And so I just want to clarify that. And I see Dan shaking his head yes. So because it sounded like some other people were saying that he said a little bit different. But while we're on that topic, I just wanted to say that. So if you're looking at, you know, the people that were surveyed, 38% said they were unsure or had no opinion about it. So to me, that kind of says, I don't have an opinion about it. I'm going to go with what the other people that do have an opinion about it. And then 21% said that departments should fully separate, but 41%, twice as many, said that they should fully integrate. So just want to clarify that.
Okay, thank you, Annie. I got a couple of questions. One question, a couple of comments. Does the task force continue? I'm sorry, but does the task force continue in any form, in a sense, like as the staff working groups do that, a lot of work and deliberation, is there any touch back and forth with the task force?
The task force actually wanted to meet from this forward every week, and we said, we had to hold them back. No, I don't think, I mean, we talked briefly about it. We think that moving forward, if you were to accept this recommendation, that briefing both boards regularly is the first approach to go. And I think part of the conversation is how do the boards work closer together moving forward? You know, are there opportunities for the boards to work more closely and synergistically? And I think that's part of this evaluation process or the implementation process. So I don't think the task force members felt the need to, but that there definitely needs to be obviously consistent updating with the boards and the legislature, predominantly with HHS on a regular basis if you're to move forward. But there seems opportunities to have the boards work closer together as well.
Okay, so as you said, not just to update HHS, but periodic, you know, relatively in-depth conversations with all of us.
I think so.
Thank you. That sounds great. Frank, you're just sitting there. I know you had nothing to do with all this. Would you like to say a few words? Yeah.
I just want to echo the thanks of the folks that took the time to go through this process. I was just one information point in everything that you saw here. Obviously, I've made my opinions clear that I think the value that we would be able to provide to the people that we serve will far surmount any challenges that we're going to face if we're able to navigate through this process. So as far as that goes, you have my commitment, whichever direction that you decide, that we will operate either as two departments or one department to serve the people the best way that we can. Obviously, we've proposed, there's a proposal in front of you that I think will give us the best chance for success. But either way, both myself and the staff are dedicated to serving the folks that we do, and we'll continue to do that either way. So we appreciate all the time everyone's taken, and we look forward to the decision and moving forward.
Thank you so much, Frank. I just want to say I think as one of the members of the board that 4 years ago this month passed a resolution saying, okay, we'll try this shared thing, but we really want the legislature 4 years from now to study it and to review it and to really weigh in and decide what the right course is. I don't think we could ever have envisioned this thoughtful or comprehensive soul searching, I will say. And it was, you know, particularly the public health department's been through kind of a lot in the last 10 years, from moving from West Hill over to North Side. So there's a lot of there's a lot of soul searching that's been done, and I think that really is going to serve all of us really well. And in fact, I think this report, you know, it probably is on our website. Is that right? Not just in the legislature packet?
I don't know, but we can make it. That's a good question.
If you could put a link on, you know, the two department websites, yep. So that somebody wants to know what do those crazy people in Tompkins County do? Yep. What did we think about? What were all the issues we looked at? I think this is a model for other counties that may be struggling with different pieces of this kind of a question. And so I think that there's a real work product here that that we can all be proud of, and really we've learned a tremendous amount. And I just, on behalf of everybody, thank you all again for everybody who include, and Jason, please include Autumn in these thanks for scheduling and managing the meetings. This has been a real contribution. So thank you all. And then 9:00 Friday, HHS will dig into this, all right, with a resolution. If there's nothing else on this topic, let us take a 5-minute recess. We have a lot more work to do, so come on back in 5 minutes. Thank you. Let us come back to order. I think we are up to County Administrator's Report. Jason Molino. Because we haven't heard from you at all tonight.
I'll make it brief. The shared services plan was submitted to you. I have to get the shared service panel together, hopefully for the TCOG meeting December 12th, so we'll get a notification out. Vote on it if I can get a quorum. Otherwise, if not, I'm going to have to call some people, and then we'll send it out to the state and go from there. I just received word that the state's going to finally probably cut off a check by the end of the year, so I'm not quite sure. They didn't reimburse. I think I shared with you they didn't reimburse Cortland County's savings out of this, which is about $250,000, because Cortland didn't do a shared service plan. But I think there's around 80 to 90,000 that'll be distributed back to us.
80 to 90 to us?
Some to us and some to the municipalities that took corrective action. I think the town did get some.
Plus the interest on the year since you submitted it?
Is that? You're joking. We submitted, that the shared service plan shared with you was about $320,000 worth of savings. We'll see how much they reimburse at the end of the day. Assuming we get it all done.
Okay.
That's all I have.
Thank you, Jason. You're Any welcome. Questions? All right. Thank you. Jonathan Wood, County Attorney.
I shared a litigation report. Please feel free to ask me any questions about it. And other than that, I have no report.
Okay. Thank you, Jonathan. Any questions besides what you might ask him after the meeting? Okay. Thank you. Rick Snyder?
I have no report for tonight. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Rolling right along. Thank you very much. Then let's go to committee reports. Public Safety Committee, Rich John, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. The Public Safety Committee met on November 21st, and we had a wide-ranging meeting. We talked about a lot of different things. Particularly, I'd like to introduce the resolution. Actually, I've got two resolutions. First is Resolution W, Appropriation from Contingent Fund, Terminal Pay, Department of Emergency Response, ID 9027, and I would move it.
Seconded by Leslin. That's packet page 149. Discussion? Short form roll call.
Rich John?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous. Thank you.
And I would then move Resolution X, resolution asking for New York State action to effectively implement the January 1, 2020 changes to the amendments to criminal procedure rules for pretrial release and the provision of discovery material to criminal defendants, ID 9060.
Seconded by Anna. Rich, and you want to start?
Yes, if I could introduce it. This is a lengthy resolution, and I apologize for the length, but Warren County had circulated a resolution with their views on the changes to the discovery rules and the bail rules that are going into effect at the beginning of the year. And after a lengthy discussion, we decided to actually have a special meeting and to work further on the draft of the resolution that we had before us. And through that, this is the effort of several different people. So I want to thank everybody on the committee who worked on this, and also Pat Buchel from probation, Lance Salisbury from assigned counsel, and Matt Van Houten from the DA's office all had input on this. And essentially what we're saying is that we approve of the reform of bail and discovery rules in the criminal justice system, but we want to make sure that it's implemented in a way that is going to work well, and frankly there should be funding for a lot of the things that New York State has asked us to do. And that's a very brief summary of it, but I'm happy to try to answer any questions.
And thank you, Rich, for spearheading this with all of us. The one thing that I did want to point out and why I feel like this is really important is because The resolution that has come out of Warren County has been passed by a group of other counties used as a template, and we got an extensive email from Lance Salisbury that walked through the whole resolution and pointed out some pretty substantial misinformation in that resolution, to the extent that some of it felt a bit like fear-mongering, because there were some statements that were literally not true. There are certain, for example, cases that would be exempted or given special treatment with respect to bail, for example, things related to sexual assault. Those were included as very explicit cases in the Warren resolution, as if, you know, that it really would be putting victims of cases at serious risk in the community. So I appreciated Lance's letter, and what we've put together, I think, serves as a much better template for the state, and I really hope NYSAC takes this as a an action list of things that we would really like to see updated and addressed in the state bills that have passed. So.
And I went to the first public safety meeting at which this was discussed, and we really did have, I would say, expert opinion from our departments and staff, and felt that we were really getting into some meaty issues, and wasn't able to get to the second meeting, but it's really a thorough and important resolution, I think. Any other discussion? Ready to vote. Don't tell the department heads that we will pass this quickly, okay? They should. Although the whole public safety committee obviously was part of the full debate. So, all right. All in favor of Resolution X, please raise your hands. No, and those opposed. Mike Sigler, did you vote?
Yeah, I think so.
What was that? Was that a yes? Okay, that's unanimous. Thank you. Any other report?
I do have just a little bit more. Last month I had reported on the September stats from our sheriff's department, particularly the jail, and the October numbers are actually even more interesting. I think we've dropped the average population in our jail just below 50, and it was carrying roughly 34 open beds. This is a record from probably the last several decades of how many people we're holding in our jail. It's in terms of it being remarkably low. And that leads me to talk about our upcoming public safety meeting that will be held on December 19th, Thursday, at 3:30 here in Chambers, where we're going to have a report from Dave Sanders, our criminal justice coordinator, and some other people to talk about all of the ATI programs that we're running, the pretrial programs, and also to talk about measurements for recidivism and where we think we're seeing trends. But so far, it seems like things are working the way we had hoped they would. But it should be a lively and good discussion on these issues at our next meeting.
Thank you, Rich. And I see that number 10 on that list of things we're recommending to the state in that resolution is that the State Commission on Corrections must revise the minimum staffing requirement for each local correctional facility upon implementation to adjust for expected reductions in local jail census. Okay. We're due for that. Okay. Thank you. Any questions or other comments for Rich? Thanks very much, Rich. Next committee, Health and Human Services, Shauna Black, Chair.
I have no report. We will meet this Friday at 9 a.m. here in the chambers. We will be joined by a nonprofit named Wonderful Wheelchairs, and they go throughout the community, pick up broken wheelchairs, fix them, return them back to people, and they also accept donated wheelchairs and provide them for a very small cost to people. If people can't afford them, they do have a sliding scale, and really it's just a way so that these mobility devices do not end up in the landfill. So it's a group of senior citizens that volunteer their time. They work out of a workshop at Cougar Ridge, and they're going to spend about 5 or 10 minutes or so just talking about what they're offering. And then we will talk about the resolution for the merge of mental health and public health.
Any questions for Shauna? Amanda.
Just about the merging, will you guys will be voting on it, and then it will come to the legislature at the following meeting.
Okay. Assuming it passes. That's right. Yes. Annie.
I'm glad to hear about the wheelchair, the wheelchair group, the group that's working with rehabbing the wheelchairs, because I know a lot of places that used to collect and offer them, whether it were Rotaries or VFWs, a lot of them have stopped doing that because they would fall in disrepair, and they were worried about liability, and they were worried about actually hurting people because they didn't know how to keep them up. And so glad to hear about that.
Yeah, I think what's really nice, too, is that they go into adult homes and nursing facilities, and they help people that need the wheelchairs. They size the wheelchairs for them, and they do adjustments. They replace the brakes. They do, like, really great things that help make people's lives who are sometimes very difficult better. So I just think it's a great organization.
All right. Thank you very much, Sean. I appreciate that. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Annie Corman, Vice Chair.
Thank you. Some of the highlights from the last meeting on November 1st of F&I, we had a report from Recycling and Solid Waste Center on a couple of topics. One of them is regarding the curbside recycling enforcement plan to reduce contamination. So you can look at our minutes. Well, actually, they're not out yet, but there'll be a report on that. And then what they're trying to do basically is not to fine people, but just if you're putting recycling out that is not actually recyclable, they're going to start to give you a warning. And then after a certain number of times, if you keep putting out a bunch of things that are not recyclable, they're going to just give you another sticker, a notice saying they're not going to pick up at your location until you do some corrective action. So I see Shauna needing some education on that. And they'll be doing, of course, more education out in the community as they're rolling that out. Yes, because with more contamination, I mean, a number of factors happen with things that are put into recycling that aren't actually able to be recycled. Some people call it wish cycling. And what that does is not only creates more work for the workers that are trying to, with a single stream, trying to get those items out, but sometimes they also clog up machines that are processing it. And if they go through, they contaminate the recycling that's collected so that you get a lower cost for it, too. And it makes the product coming out less usable, too. And they also are working on a draft RFP for the operation and marketing of all the materials that come through, of the recycling materials that come through the Solid Waste Center. And so that's a draft RFP. That's an opportunity for the companies to give us feedback on it. Because it's very difficult to find the right company to do it, and things are shifting and changing over the years, so they're putting out a draft one first, and this will be a long process, which again will be detailed. It's actually in our agenda from last time that if you're interested in seeing how long it's going to take and the different requirements, they will, the company will be required to pay a living wage. And we also passed the resolution approving the bond anticipation notes, which we had the hearing for tonight, and I just wanted to clarify, as Barbara Regenspan had mentioned, that this being a 30-year bond, putting it on the next generation, we are trying to, Mike and our, I believe our administration is working on trying to shorten that down to 25 years or 20 years.
We're trying to get a 25-year bond. Right now it's only authorized for 10. In fact, I have
10.
It's authorized for 10, so we're trying to get it expanded to a 25-year bond.
Okay.
And that'll be a home rule request that will probably come in front of you within the next month or so.
Okay.
Assuming that I'm in communication. Actually, today I had a communication from Jordan Lesser at Assemblywoman Lifton's office about it.
Okay. And that will be paid for with the RFPs. I'm sorry, the PFCs, LPQs. No, I'm just making letters and numbers up. That'll be paid with PFCs, the passenger
facility
charges when you buy a ticket.
Some of the passenger facility charges will go to pay off some of the debt. Yes, that's the intent.
Okay. Thank you. Let's see if there is anything else. I think everything else was covered in the other resolutions, and our next meeting is December 19th at 1 o'clock in these chambers.
All right. Thank you. Rick.
And just one more thing for the airport. This next series of notes that we're authorizing that we'll be issuing in February is just a one-year ban. So that gives us plenty of time to look at financing options over the next year, find out what revenue sources have come in, which ones did not, you know, maybe seek some other ones. PFCs has always been the plan for how we're going to retire the debt on our side of it, but if there's any additional monies that may be needed over and above PFCs, but it gives us a whole year after the project has been completed for us to look at it in a non-rushed fashion to make the best possible choices. Like Jason said, amortizing it over a longer period than what they originally said we were allowed to, which was only 10 years. So there's a lot of variables and things that are on the drawing board, so to speak. So this initial $10 million is just one of those one-year bans, bond anticipation notes, that buys us some time to look at what our ultimate final financing long-term will be. I just thought I'd throw that in there so that we don't feel like we're doing anything rashly.
And one proposal that's out there still is the proposal to NYSEG for funding for the geothermal system, and we understand the actual RFP is coming out tomorrow. We were told, I think I mentioned at the last meeting, that our proposal was seen as very complete and a quality proposal. So we're pushing on that in a few different ways. So Mike Lane and then Dan.
If I could just add a little supplement to Ann's report on transportation, two things. One, the New York State bridge, the new bridge in the village of Freeville over Fall Creek, opened a day or two before Thanksgiving. So that bridge is now open. That awful detour around through McLean is no longer necessary. And the other thing is that the Route 13 study committee meets tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., I believe, right here.
Dan?
We're talking about bonds, and the speaker talked about saddling the future, you know, our descendants with the debt, and that's one way to interpret it, but I have a different interpretation, which is the airport and bridges and roads, these are long-term projects that, you know, hopefully, theoretically, will be in use for decades, and so the idea of bonding is to spread that out over the decades, so we're not paying for the whole thing today, and then, you know, someone that moves in next year never has to pay a dime on it. So it's just a different way that I prefer to interpret why we bond.
That the people who are going to use it are helping to pay for it. All right. Anything else for facilities? Thanks very much, Annie. Next committee, Government Operations, Mike Lane, Chair.
Yes, we haven't met since our last legislature meeting. We will meet again on Thursday, this Thursday the 5th, at 1:30 in the old jail. And we have one resolution tonight.
Okay. Go ahead.
Resolution Y, appropriation from contingent fund to provide an operationally functional office for the Tompkins County Historian. That's ID 9003. I so move.
Seconded by Amanda. Discussion?
It's kind of a strange title, but basically what it is office is in the Tompkins County Center for History and Culture and has some old furniture, and this is being swapped with some other furniture. And this is paying for all of that happening.
All right, thank you. Anything else? A short form roll call.
Rich John?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Are there any no's? All right, that's unanimous. Is that it, Mike?
That's all.
Thank you very much. Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, Anna Kellis, Vice Chair.
We have not met since our last meeting, the full meeting. Our next meeting is Wednesday, December 18th. That is not our normal time, 9:30 to 11:30. And I would note Deborah is still with us. So this is straight from the director's mouth, chair of the committee. General in command of committee. Two things that she would like to cover. One is, and Dan, I hope you're going to be there. She really wanted to continue the conversation and really appreciated allowing it to go in this way. So specifically to continue to talk about the plan moving forward for what that fund covers. And the other thing that she would like to also have is to have Katie give a presentation on what the committee or what the department currently does with respect to trails so that we know what we currently do, and that would give us a sense of where we might want to go. So thank you, Deborah.
Anna, you said the next meeting is the 19th at 9:30?
It is the 18th. At 9:30, Wednesday, December 18th, from 9:30 to 11:30.
Okay, great. Thank you. Yeah, the TCAT appointment.
That's through HED.
Okay. Is there anything? All right. Any questions for Anna about PEAK? All right. Thank you very much. Thank you, Deborah. All right. Budget, Capital, and Personnel. Mike Lane, Chair.
Well, again, we haven't had a meeting. We were planning to have a meeting on Monday in an executive session for our direct report reviews, but weather decided otherwise for us. So we will be rescheduling that. And I have one resolution.
Okay.
It's Z, adoption of local law number H of 2019, repeal of local law number 4 of 2019, a local law overriding tax levy limit for 2020. That's ID 9006, and I so move.
Seconded by Amanda. Discussion? All right, ready to vote. All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. All set? That's it, Mike?
That's all.
All right. Workforce, thank you. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean-Claiborne, Chair.
WDIC will meet on Monday, December 9th, 3:30, right here in Chambers. We have a very long agenda. So I report.
All right. Any questions? Thank you, Leslie. Housing and Economic Development, Anna Kellis, Chair.
We will be meeting on Tuesday, December 10th. That is not our normal time, but adjusted for the holidays. That is 9:30 to 11:30. Two of the topics that we will be discussing, one of them is a list of housing services that are currently provided by the county. One of the reasons that we did that is that the county does not have land use authority, which makes it really difficult for us to grapple with, wrap our brains around what it is that we actually can do and do with respect to housing. So the intention was to
outline in detail what it is that we are providing in the context of housing development as well as housing services to sort of create a clearer sense of our identity in the context of housing. The other thing that we will be having is a presentation from TCAD for their annual work plan, and I think I have a resolution.
Yep. Go ahead.
This is Resolution BB, affirming Ithaca-Tompkins County Transportation Council ITCTC recommendation to increase the ITCTC staff directory salary ID number 9008. And I so move.
Thank you. Second by Mike Lane. Discussion.
Ready to vote.
All in favor of...
Is that a roll call?
That's it. Never mind. Don't vote. Wait a second. Short form roll call.
Rich John?
Yes.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Are there any no's? All right. Thank you. That is unanimous.
And I would like to move my second resolution, which is to recommend the reappointment of Dan Klein to another full three-year term to the TCAT board.
Seconded by Ann Corman. Okay. I would point out that this is a they always ask us for this early in November or early December because they have their annual meeting Thursday.
Yes.
Okay. And and this is a recommendation to their board. They don't have to take a recommendation, but they never have not. So
I would note too, Dan is currently on the executive committee, and you have been leading for the last year the site plan review committee. So a very extensive position in this last year, so thank you.
Mike Lane.
I've been real pleased to have Dan as our representative. We get a lot of feedback from him about what's going on there, and he sends us regular emails and keeps us informed, and I think that's pretty important. I know it's not the easiest task in the world to serve on the TCAT board, but I certainly appreciate his doing that.
Yes, thank you very much, Dan. Any other discussion? All in favor of that motion, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you, Anna. Thank you for putting that on. All set? All right. Thanks so much. Complete Census Count Committee. Mike Lane, Chair.
Well, this Complete Census Count Committee's meeting bit the dust again, or I should say bit the snow, on December 2nd. So we have not yet rescheduled. Not sure whether we're going to do that or not, or whether we're going to wait till January.
All right. Any questions? Thank you, Mike. Downtown Facilities Committee, Glenn Morey, Chair.
We have not met since the last legislation meeting. The property closing date will be December 30th. So we'll cancel the December 12th meeting.
The last thing you said, what?
We'll be meeting in January.
In January. Okay. Any questions for Glenn? All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Can I get a motion on the minutes of November 19th, 2019? Moved by Anna, second by Shauna. Discussion? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Can I get a motion to adjourn? Anna, Henry, yes. All in favor. Thank you so much, folks. Have a good evening.